Greetings, and welcome back to the podcast. This episode, we are joined by Mr. William Lundin, President and CEO of International Petroleum Corp, a TSX and Stockholm Stock Exchange listed energy company with a market cap of approximately $2 billion Canadian and 16 billion Swedish krona respectively. Mr. Lundin was the Chief Operating Officer of IPC from December 2020 until the end of 2023. In January 2024, he was appointed President and CEO. Mr. Lundin is also currently a director of Chemaren Petroleum Corp, Philo Corp, and Oron Energy, and serves on the board of the Lundin Foundation. Mr. Lundin holds a degree in mineral resource engineering from Dalhousie University. Among other things, we sat down and discussed climbing Mount Everest, a few lessons from the Lundin family, and what's next for IPC. Enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Galatea Technologies. Galatea is a software company based in Calgary that is focused on helping producers better manage their fluid logistics. Galatea enables field operators and truck drivers with the ability to make the optimal decision on every waste, water, or clean oil load, resulting in 20% savings on trucking and disposal costs. The Galatea platform makes it easy to create digital truck tickets, manifests, and shipping documents that automatically flow through the field data capture and finance systems. Galatea's platform is used by over 50% of Canadian producers, 600 trucking companies, and hundreds of disposal locations. Visit GalateaTech.com to learn more about how to optimize that last line on your lease op. This podcast is brought to you by Energy United. Energy United is an organization with a mission to promote practical energy policy across Canada. Energy United is building a community of Canadians that are passionate about Canada's natural gas and oil industry and are willing to take action. Energy United is driving change on issues that matter, all the way from the carbon tax to the emissions cap. Join Energy United to make a difference at energyunited.ca. This podcast is sponsored by HeadRacingCanada.com. In partnership with four-time Olympian Manny Osborne Parody, HeadRacingCanada.com is now offering free shipping on European factory performance ski gear. Bypassing brick-and-mortar savings on to customers, HeadRacingCanada.com offers the lowest pricing available in Canada. Check out HeadRacingCanada.com for more info and get your new ski gear for the season. Good morning, Mr. Will Lundin. Thank you very much for doing this. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Trevor, and thanks for featuring me on your platform. Super excited to spend the time with you here today.
I know your time is valuable, but there are a lot of listeners out there that will really appreciate your insights. For the listener, you are the CEO of International Petroleum Corp. But for anyone that is listening, what is International Petroleum Corp?
International Petroleum Corporation is an upstream oil and gas company. We're publicly traded and listed on the TSX as well as on the Swedish Stock Exchange under the ticker symbol IPCO. We have a high-quality portfolio of assets that are quite diverse, and so we are focused on really maximizing value and a free cash flow-focused company.
You are also a member of a very successful family. Above average in a lot of ways with a ton of success, but also have been able to keep the success going, which is sometimes rare in the business world. So,
yeah, that's right. You know, my brothers and I, we take it as a chip on our shoulder. I think that one of the sayings that goes along there is by the time, you know, a family gets to its third generation, that's typically when the empire all falls apart. So we're very competitive in my family and breathing and working in the natural resource industry pretty much our whole lives and absolutely love what we do. So that's just added fuel to the fire to continue propelling these companies forward and trying to maximize value for all stakeholders involved with respect to the companies that we're involved in.
Also a big skier. Are you getting out this weekend?
Absolutely. Yes. I will try to get some skiing in this weekend here in the Alps. So based in Geneva here, quite a lot of options in terms of mountains to ski in, which is super nice to have.
I thought for the purposes of today's conversation, we could structure it loosely around a little bit about you and the Lundin family and then get into IPC. But to rewind the clock a little bit, how did you get into energy and why?
Yeah, it sounds good, Trevor. So for myself, again, growing up in a natural resource focused family, talking about whether it's mining and metals and minerals or working in the energy space, oil and gas, this is something that I'd been exposed to in terms of family dialogue ever since I can remember. So it was always a natural affinity and a desire for me to work in the energy space, specifically being born into it and then going through, you know, my engineering degree and getting my certification as a mineral resource engineer. Started the early days working for various companies within the Lundin Group, doing summer jobs, working at mine sites and different places. And that really continued to build my interest, getting the actual grassroots exposure. And so once I had finished my schooling, started working in the field for a company by the name of Black Pearl Resources. Super important to get a few years of experience under my belt, working at an actual operation directly and doing related shift work. So I would say it's just something that's interested me in terms of working in the primary resource space since I can remember. And as I've been working in this space directly now for quite some time, the interest continues to expand year over year here. And I think it's really underpinned by doing something that's so critical in terms of servicing the needs to human civilization and providing the critical resources that are needed to make everything go around. And in that same process, the job creation and the opportunities that can be made from that are something that really excites me.
You're also an interesting person. Like I mentioned, you're a big skier, but one of the recent projects you have taken on is Project No Limit to honor your late father. Maybe for the listener, what is Project No Limit?
Yeah, Project No Limit. I mean, unfortunately, I lost my father in the middle of 2022 to a pretty severe brain cancer called glioblastoma, which isn't a very common form of cancer. And it's not very well known. And big pharma companies don't focus on glioblastoma because it's a smaller type of cancer. And so unfortunately, seeing our father live through this and passing away, one of my brothers, we decided to do a project that would be extremely challenging and trying to summit Mount Everest. And we don't have much mountaineering experience, but we thought, you know, by surrounding ourselves with a really good team and taking that calculated risk that we'd be able to do it. And we were very fortunate to be able to summit on May 16th of 2023, just last year safely. So that was a phenomenal experience. And we really want to be able to now use this documentary that's recently been compiled as a springboard to try and raise more awareness and funding towards the fight against glioblastoma. And we've started a foundation as well that underpins this initiative that has a partnership with the hospital that helped administer my father through this terrible cancer that he suffered from.
You remember when you reached the top of Mount Everest?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, it's been quite a whirlwind to try and get this project completed with all that's going on in our personal and business lives, but we managed to do it. It's amazing. It's been less than a year since we conquered the feat. It was a serious day. It was minus 60 degrees Celsius with wind chill. It was howling winds. So by the time we finally got to the top of the peak there, you're quite exhausted. But as you are going for that summit push, it feels like you're going to get over a ridge and that's where the summit's going to be. But then it's almost there's another ridge and another ridge. So by the time you finally get to the top, it's almost like, wow, this is actually it. So it's a pretty big relief, but at the same time as well, it's really tough getting to the top, but it's almost more challenging getting to the bottom because there's only one pathway for people to go up and down. So that was an adventure in its own right, just getting back down the mountain.
If I'm correct, one of your guides was Nims Perja. How did you meet Nims?
That's right. So what we do within the Lundin Group is we have Lundin Group summits typically once every 2 years. And so we had contacted Nims to try and feature him in one of our summit events. And unfortunately, he was tied up, so we couldn't do that, but we managed to get his contact information. And the Project No Limit was sort of conceived in the same time period. And so we were able to further engage him, and we understood that he has his own company called Elite Exped. So he does these excursions and leads a lot of clients every year to Everest, as well as different mountains throughout the world, multiple times a year. So we were able to form that partnership with him and go with other people within his group. It was really amazing to be able to do this climb with such a prominent individual in the mountaineering space in NIMS. And he's most definitely the real deal.
For anyone that is listening, NIMS Peugeot is the star of the 14 Peaks show on Netflix. When you're hanging around somebody like that, are there any lessons or from somebody?
Yeah,
like
NIMS is his military background, served in the special forces within the UK for a long time. So he's a very regimented individual, no filter, and tells you exactly what you need to do. And if you step offside, he'll give you an earful. That's the type of instructor guide that you want in doing something as dangerous as climbing Mount Everest. So I think for me, and specifically my brother Jack, who also joined this climb, we really appreciated his directness, and we're quite direct as well. And everything that we want to do, you know, 24 hours in a day is not enough time, it seems sometimes. So it's all about being very pointed with your actions that you're taking and getting straight to the point. So he was a like-minded individual, and we're happy to have continued a good communication channel with him, and do have some communications with him every now and then.
Speaking of lessons, this podcast is about you and IPC, but maybe to think back on your late father, he had a lot of success in the business industry. If you were to maybe distill two or three lessons that he left you, or maybe one in particular, is there anything that comes to mind in terms of business lessons?
Yeah, I think when you think of my father, you think of him being as an eternal optimist. And so always kind of being a glass half full type of individual, and, you know, attacking challenges and opportunities and being able to see through some of the difficulties and seeing what could happen on the other side of that. And I think just that positivity is such a key aspect of somebody's characteristics and personalities that can really leave quite an impression. And rather than being bogged down in negativity and being ultra conservative at all times. So he was a calculated risk taker. He's very optimistic, but he also had a good ability to adapt and be able to really take in information and react accordingly, rather than being set on a certain type of way. So it's important to be able to listen and to hear different opinions and be able to take that in and make informed decisions. And I think another thing as well that's a takeaway from my late father is remaining opportunistic and positive, but also to enjoy life and to work really hard, but also set time for your family. And he did a really good job at managing to focus on his family, spend time with his family in conjunction with doing a lot in his work life. And he still managed to find time to do adventures. And so, you know, he was able to do all of these things, whether he's going to do dirt bike racing in the Dakar or different, you know, river rafting excursions. He would set this time and this physical activity and adventures. And he would do all these things in parallel with usually being on the phone. But, you know, he was able to enjoy life and get after and do fun, adventurous things whilst working and taking a lot on at the same time. So I think really balancing and prioritizing things accordingly, but also making time to have fun, you know, can really make you thrive as an individual.
To go one rung up from that, your grandpa Adolf was also very successful. Are there any lessons that he passed on that really resonate?
You know, very similar to my father. I think it was I was around 10 or so when my grandfather had passed, but, you know, he had a big sense of humor. And that's something that rubbed off that I could remember when he'd bring all the grandkids around him. And, you know, he's always trying to crack jokes here or there, or keep everything relatively lighthearted and positive as well. So definitely very positive, but also very serious when it came into coming into the boardroom or different meetings and being able to put the business hat on in a proper sense.
Well, that's a little bit about the Lundin family and some of the history, but to
get into yourself and IPC. Like we mentioned, you are the CEO of International Petroleum Corporation nowadays, but I guess you start from the top. You're recently named CEO. As CEO, what is your number one priority to create shareholder value, and how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, it's all about maximizing stakeholder value for the company. And, you know, for IPC, we are in such a phenomenal position as a company as things stands today in terms of having a super healthy balance sheet, having a net cash position. We're producing just shy of 50,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day at our current time and place. And when we look at maximizing value, there's three things that come to mind, which is all kind of underpinned to capital allocation and good capital allocation. So we focus on organic growth, where we have our Blackrod project, which is going to be a big greenfield development in Alberta that's underway right now, and it's going to add 30,000 barrels of oil per day to the company. We also look at stakeholder returns as a second core strategic pillar for the company. Maintaining shareholder returns is super important. We've been able to do that year over year for quite some time, and we'll look to continue doing that going forward. And the third key thing as well is M&A. So we've really been able to amass a portfolio in IPC, largely through growing through M&A and acquiring assets at maybe value disconnects, and been able to create a lot of value through the acquisitions that we've achieved.
What makes IPC different from the average energy company in Canada or globally with your assets? How do you think about that? What sets the company apart?
Yeah, no, I think there's quite a few things in terms of what IPC is unique relative to the peer group. Obviously, we have a diversified production mix. Our headquarters are in Geneva here, and we have about 15% of our production mix right now is weighted towards Brent-linked oil from our producing assets in Malaysia and France. And then we also have 33% of our overall production mix is natural gas. So it's great having that diversified production mix, but I also think when you look at IPC in terms of our cash flow generation in the short term as well in the long term, that's something that really attracts people to IPC and our existing investors and hopefully future investors. We have around 124 million shares outstanding as a company, and we're forecasted to make around $350 million in OCF at strip in 2024. But what's more exciting is once we have Blackrod coming on stream, which first oil is expected in late 2026, and we're going to be in a situation where OCF at current prices is going to double come around 2027, 2028. So, you know, we're in a unique position having this strong balance sheet, good producing assets, and investing in the future, all whilst at the same time reducing our share count. And so that's a powerful combination as a company to be able to have meaningful production growth coming in the near term in conjunction with keeping your share count very low and actually reducing it through time.
IPC recently, I think, commenced its normal course issuer bid in Canada to reduce share count, but are you leaning one way between buybacks and dividends? How are you thinking about that in terms of the company right now?
Yeah, you know, we look at it pretty simply at this point in time. Our 2P net asset value as a company is around $3.1 billion certified by an independent reserve auditor in terms of our 2P technical profiles. And that overall NAV that we have and our market cap's around 1.4, 1.5 billion USD, you know, that represents greater than a 50% discount relative to our intrinsic value. So we feel that putting $1 to buying back our stock that's very undervalued versus one dividend out the door is the best way to create meaningful shareholder value at this stage. And we also think that by doing this, it also really is putting our money where our mouth is by ultimately believing in our story and the numbers that we're putting out. And, you know, I think within the Canadian E&P space, you do see 2P net asset value companies trading at relatively sizable discounts, but IPC at the size that we're at, we seem to stick out a little bit more at this point in time. And I think a part of that reason is because we are investing for growth in the future, but when we're going to be delivering in excess of $400 to $600 million in free cash flow upon Blackrod coming on stream, that's going to put us in a really strong position going forward.
IPC has options. You have assets globally, but you have decided to focus a bit of your attention on Canada. How do you view Canada geopolitically or from a political perspective? Do you see opportunity? Do you view it as a kind of a risky environment? How do you see Canada?
Yeah, big fan of Canada, obviously fiscally and politically pretty stable as well. It's one of the biggest resource countries that exists in the world behind Venezuela and Saudi Arabia. We took a bet going into Canada in early 2018 when we had acquired the Suffield asset from Cenovus that this differential, the WTI to WCS diff, going to be something that's going to be sorted out through time in terms of the additional egress pipeline capacity being installed. And you know, now we're really reaping the benefits of those decisions that were made to grow the business in Canada with what's happening in the TMX pipeline about to come on stream in the not too distant future here. So I think Canada is an absolutely phenomenal place to be doing business because of all of those items that I had mentioned. And I think if there's more opportunities in terms of assets that we can acquire or companies that we acquire on a favorable metric level, something that we'd be interested in continuing to do, given that we've established pretty significant operating base and a really good set of teams in Canada. So we love doing business in Canada and we're there for the long run.
Speaking of Suffield, you've had some great well results there lately. The 420 multilateral in Southern Alberta has come on really strong. Without giving away your secrets, or if you can't talk about it, that's fine. But what is behind the performance of this well? And I guess the question is why?
Yeah, absolutely. So Core 4 was a company, is a private company that we had acquired in early 2023. And so that was for around $62 million USD in consideration. And with it brought in excess of 5,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, split between 80-20 between liquids and natural gas, and had about 16 million 2P reserves at the time. And those metrics to get that asset and it being just adjacent to the Suffield block was a huge win to us. But what really also excited us about this company and its package was the Ellerslie formation and some of the wells that that company had been drilling. And within Suffield, we do have some Ellerslie formation related targets as well. So this is something that had been on our radar. And so upon acquisition of Core 4 Resources, we drilled and completed about 8 wells in 2023. And those results have largely exceeded our pre-drill expectations. And so, you know, the Ellerslie formation or the Basal Quartz formation, this is something that had been, I think, overlooked in previous years. And the horizontal drilling technology has really unlocked this play. And now it's something that's super exciting where it's around 16-degree API, good oil saturations and permeabilities in place. By doing cheap drilling and not having to case the wells, you can do open hole completions and just run some liners if you're out of zone in a few areas. You know, it makes for pretty good returns in drilling wells within this area. And so we look at the Ellerslie formation as a really exciting pocket story within the IPC portfolio. And we're drilling, completing, and tying in wells around $2 million and coming on in excess of 200 barrels of oil per day for IP30 rates, and at times double that. And so at current pricing, they're paying back well within a year. You're talking about 100% IRR on these wells. So it's been phenomenal having this little pocket story in the portfolio. And it's something that's definitely a key focus for us to continue to maximize and drill out. I mean, we have 5 wells that are budgeted for 2024 to drill within the Ellerslie between Suffield and Core 4, which we now call Brooks, within Southern Alberta and IPC. And we have in excess of 20 locations booked in our 2P reserves. And I think there's a lot more running room beyond that we hold within our contingent resources in this area. So something that is going to be a key focus for us that we'll look to continue to maximize.
Just a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, and we'll be right back to the show. This podcast episode is sponsored by Conate Water Solutions. Do you need cost-effective water sourcing options to supply your next drilling or completions program? Conate Water Solutions is a specialized hydrogeology company focused on water well drilling, testing, and water management services in Western Canada and Texas. Contact info at conatewater.com or check out conatewater.com for more details.
In Canada, IPC has Onion Lake, Suffield, Blackrod, and Ferguson. You kind of just touched on where you're focused on, but of those areas, or is there one that really sticks out for IPC? Or are you just preserving optionality in all of them?
Yeah, it's a great question. We have a nice diverse portfolio there in Canada, for sure. I think of course, with Blackrod being the big growth asset and ultimately going to be our flagship oil producing asset and cash flow generating asset, that's going to be at the top of the list and priority asset given how much money we're deploying into it. Outside of that, Onion Lake Thermal is doing in excess of 13,000 barrels of oil per day, just under 14 actually, and so that asset has been delivering really well. And something that we love about SAGD is that flat production profile, high recovery factors, and predictable cost nature as well. And by having natural gas production in Canada, one of the primary cost drivers on the OPEX front for SAGD can be your energy input costs in terms of the natural gas that you're purchasing typically to fire up your power generation. And so we're in a position where we actually sell more gas than we consume. And so we're going to be vertically hedged or net long ultimately till around 2030. So I think that puts us in a unique position as a SAGD producer to have that shallow gas production as well in the portfolio. And in terms of what we do, we look to maximize value at all the assets. And so we don't want to leave one asset behind. And there's quite a lot of activity this year that's taking place. We have a capital expenditure budget of $437 million for 2024, and that's inclusive of just under $10 million going towards decommissioning related expenditure. But if we're to look at where's that money going outside of Blackrod, which is going to be around $360 million, what we're doing is, as I had touched on in terms of the drilling within the Suffield and Brooks area, we're also drilling at our Ferguson asset, and that's going to start happening within about a month's time. We've budgeted for three wells to be drilled at that asset. And then also looking at another smaller asset that we have in the portfolio in Canada called Mooney, which is a polymer flood. And we're looking to send some of that chemical injection to the phase two area of this asset that hasn't been on any type of flood yet. So there's a little bit going on at each of our assets. At Onion Lake Thermal, we just finished completing the sustaining pad L. And so we're tying on and bring on stream. I believe there's around three more wells out of the eight well pairs out of that pad that are still to be tied in. So a little bit of activity going on at all our assets. And that's an important theme within IPC is really to maximize the value of all of our assets. And we're fortunate to be in a good financial position to be able to do that.
Another thing IPC has been pretty good at is acquisitions. In 2020, it was before your time, if I'm correct, as CEO, but the company picked up Granite Oil Corp. I don't know if you have any insights on that, but what led to that decision? Did you guys realize now is the time to be buying?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, at the time when we had acquired Granite, we'd almost would have wished it could have waited a quarter or two. So it would have been just after the double whammy event, which took place in the two black swans with COVID and then the price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia. So we had acquired it in Q1, Granite of 2020, and we were coming off the back end of a very high capital expenditure year in the company of 2019, where we spent around $180 to $190 million in CapEx. So when we had acquired Granite for around 80 million CAD at the time, I believe the figure was, we were in excess of 3x net debt to EBITDA. And then oil prices started crashing just after Q1 there and going into April. And so we were in a position there where we really scaled down our base business activity. We were drilling in Malaysia at the beginning of that year as well. And oil prices averaged $42 Brent for 2020. And we still managed to come out with $9 million in free cash flow generation for the company, despite spending $80 million in CapEx through 2020. So I think we were able to really put our operational proficiency on full display. And that's one of the huge benefits of being operator of the assets that you have, is your ability to modulate spending as needed.
The critic would say, I want a hands-on CEO in Canada. That's... is here 100% of the time. But do you view being located in Switzerland as an advantage, kind of a detachment that allows you to take an objective view?
Absolutely. I think that's definitely a key benefit, having a decentralized management team that's away from your area of operations, in terms of being able to have an objective view, not being biased. And in terms of capital allocation, ensuring that where you're putting money towards is going towards the best things possible, depending on your liquidity position at the time. And this type of business model that's in place is not something that's new to the Lundin Group on the energy side. When we started IPC, there was around 200 employees and contractors and about 30 people in Geneva. Today, we have around 500 employees and contractors across the globe. Of course, the big growth coming from Canada there, and the headcount in Geneva hasn't changed. It's still around 30 people. So what we have in place here is we have our technical department, economics department, we have our finance team, as well as some of the executive committee that exists within Geneva. So it's a fit for purpose setup and a business model that's very much scalable and able to take that objective view in terms of how we rank our investment opportunities and decisions, and be able to look at other opportunities as well outside of the opportunities that exist within the particular geographies where our operations are. And further to that, the benefits of being in Central Europe, the majority of our shareholders, excluding insiders, are located in Europe as well. So we feel that we're able to try and cast a wider net and also have analyst coverage, European-based as well as Canada-based, to try and get the word out as much as possible. So we very much view it as more of a positive than a negative to have. And, you know, when we started life in IPC versus to where we are today, just from a share price perspective, the company's 4x higher than where we were upon spinoff. So it's translated into really good results for IPC. And also, if you look at Lundin Energy, our predecessor company where we were spun off from, that company as well, you know, was grown to a very, very big scale. And the corporate headquarters were always located in Geneva. So that kind of business model has been something that's really proven, tried and tested and worked well for us. And not only within Lundin Energy IPC, but even dating back further in the original IPC that was founded by my grandfather, or even Gulfstream Resources, some of the older entities that had existed had this type of business model as well.
Kind of a Berkshire Hathaway decentralized business model, perhaps.
Absolutely, exactly. Value focused.
IPC operates in regions globally, but there are challenges with that. What are some of the challenges, and on the flip side, opportunities with having assets around the world?
Yeah, you know, I think as well, further to the previous question as well, and some of the comments that I was providing, I think an important element of having a sort of decentralized management team or office relative to where your assets are situated is ensuring that you're, you know, empowering the people and the assets to be able to make day-to-day decisions and not be bogging them down with bureaucracy. So, you know, we're able to give a lot of autonomy to our teams in the regions where we operate in. But in terms of some of the challenges, of course, you know, different fiscal terms, different regimes that exist in these places. So understanding the ins and outs that exist associated with that, as well as the different structures and holding companies that are required to really have a optimally set up system. Some of these things can be challenges that can exist, but I think it's nothing that is insurmountable in terms of what you have to do to run an international business as such an IPC.
On the subject of competition, there are lots of energy companies out there. It's a competitive market and it's a commodity-like business. How does IPC remain competitive? And how do you think about that? You kind of touched on with the capital allocation, but what do you view as the strengths of the company?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think having the Lundin Group and of course being a part of the Lundin family, I think that's something that's hard to quantify in terms of having a major shareholder and being supportive of the management approach in terms of running the company, as well as, you know, having a track record of clear success and capital allocation, and that's translated into good returns, is something that as well is important to a good company. And there's not a lot of companies out there with the owner operator type of mentality. So when you have that type of skin in the game, you know how vested the people are within the company. So there's no question of, is this something where are the team super committed and going to pursue or do everything in their power to maximize value, because you have a large shareholder that's involved and also working directly within the company. So, you know, I think these are some things that are important to us, and we think that can translate to a company that maybe sticks out beyond a competitive landscape of many oil and gas companies that exist. But again, having the shareholding count where it's at today, the cash flow that's coming, as well as a very clearly communicated forward-looking plan that demonstrates significant returns relative to a company of our size, in our view, of course, being slightly biased, but even in an objective view, if I try to be, it creates for a screaming buy. And that's, you know, something that we try to do in our disclosure materials as well, is trying to not complicate things too much, keep things very crystal clear, and also be transparent with your long-term projections and what goes into that.
Some energy companies in Canada have at times listed in the States to try and gain exposure. The markets in Canada at times are undervalued, not getting the correct valuation for the companies. Have you seen positives to being European-based and some of the advantages of being listed in another market? How do you think about that? Is it a big advantage, or does it just depend on business success at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think with our listings right now being in Sweden as well as in Canada there through the TSX, given our shareholder makeup and what we have with the North America following, as well as a significant following in the Nordic space and in Europe, we feel like it's a good setup for IPC specifically. And most companies within the Lundin Group have this type of dual listing arrangement. Doing an additional listing and looking at somewhere like the US, it's something we've thought about, but you would want to be doing it on the back end of probably a big liquidity event or putting out some sort of equity to try and spark that interest and have sufficient volume traded in that jurisdiction of where you'd want to do another listing. So I think for us, and also being listed in the States, it opens you up in terms of a lot more disclosure requirements and the legality of the whole thing, as well as something that has not really sparked our interest or something that we're focused on doing in the near term, at least.
You kind of touched on in terms of optionality, but how does the business keep optionality? You've got assets around the globe, but you've also got a lot of oil properties in Canada. How do you think about that? Are you just focused on what you own now, or where are you looking for the future of the company?
Yeah, in terms of optionality, I mean, the company's projections right now, just based on our 2P reserves, are really robust, with a healthy inventory of 27-year reserve life index based on our 2P reserves. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of value to be created and cash to be generated out of the portfolio just within our 2P reserves. But what also IPC has is, you know, greater than a billion barrels of contingent resources. And so the majority of those are situated at the Blackrod asset. And with that resource being as extensive as it is, future phase expansions are something that is definitely on the table and something that we're continuing to think about and hone in terms of what's next following the Blackrod phase one development. And there's, you know, around 100 million barrels of contingent resources that we also have outside of the Blackrod asset, which is a key focus for the company to continue to mature those resources into reserves. Looking outside of the portfolio, you know, we're going to remain opportunistic to growing the business through M&A, really something that is in our DNA. We've been able to get into the position where we are today, largely through doing accretive acquisitions. But in the size that we're able to do, it's going to be smaller for the next couple of years until we get Blackrod on stream. We don't want to put ourselves in too risky of a position where we stretch ourselves or stretch the balance sheet and try and do a home run and do a big transaction. And, you know, when we think about using our paper in a transaction, it's not something that we're really interested in at this stage because we're trading at such a significant discount. But as an opportunistic company and individual, you know, never say never. If there's a compelling opportunity to do a combination with a company that's trading at a steeper discount than us, you know, that's something that we'd entertain and looking at. But I think the name of the game for IPC is execute on Blackrod phase one development, continue delivering shareholder returns, and execute a accretive tuck-in style acquisition over the next couple of years. And once we get Blackrod on stream, the ability for us to do much more sizable acquisitions is going to be there. And I think if we were to take a step back before sanctioning the Blackrod project, we were very deeply involved in a couple different M&A opportunities and acquisition opportunities. One in Canada, Clearwater focused company, went to one of our competitors or peers, if you will. That happened in 2022. And we were really close to being able to acquire that asset, but we weren't quite there from a price standpoint. And same thing that happened in 2022. We were looking to do two major deals. Another one was in Malaysia, which was going to be an offshore asset, which was going to add 20,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day. And we were on the borderline of being able to make really big acquisitions relative to the size of the company that we were at the time, and we weren't able to get there in terms of the price that the seller was willing to transact at, but they got far into the stages. And so we were able to look within our portfolio and had always been maturing along Blackrod, and to have that option value and to have, you know, the amount of resource sitting at that asset and amount of the technical work that's already been done into it, we're really fortunate to have that optionality to say, okay, these big deals in the M&A market didn't pan out. Time to go on with Blackrod. And we had been maturing the front-end engineering and design studies through 2022. So it ultimately put us in a position come 2023 that we weren't able to get sizable acquisitions done at a price sub $65 Brent, but we were able to sanction a greenfield development project for a sub $60 WTI break even. And so that option value and having that in the portfolio is not something that a lot of companies have. And, you know, it's all about getting through your CapEx, your central processing facility, getting that dialed in. Once you get through the CapEx hurdle with SAGD assets, as we know with Onion Lake asset, good things comes from there, of course, dependent on commodity prices. But when you get a large resource in place like that, whether it's through low times, there's going to be enough high times. And we're generally very bullish on oil on the outlook that we think it was the right decision for the company to make at that time.
The Lundin Group is fortunate to have the resources behind it, but the tricky part is making undervalued acquisitions and paying the right price at the right time. For example, the Clearwater, some may view it's too late to buy into that play. It's already fully valued. How do you think about that when you're looking for assets? Do you need to make sure you're buying undervalued things, looking where others aren't?
Yeah, you know, that's, if we were to put a blueprint together into what our preference would be for assets, of course, we'd want, you know, light oil if possible, fully oil weighted and dealing in super sound jurisdiction, put target financing against it. Ideally, it's accretive on a 5-year free cash flow perspective. And ideally, we could get it at a price that is cheaper relative to buying back our own stock. And now, of course, the reality is that all of these things are unlikely to come together. But looking at asset opportunities, a common benchmark that we do like to use is, you know, what is it if we compare against buying back our own stock or buying an asset or a company, what's more accretive to do so? And so ideally it's on the side where it's more accretive to be able to buy a company or an asset rather than buying back our own stock. And, you know, sometimes things aren't perfect as such. Think if there's something absolutely transformational and very sizable, we may have to step outside of that common rule of thumb, if you will, in terms of a metric that we focus on. But it's all about, you know, being returns focused, value focused. And as a company, we don't have a certain production target that we're just focused on getting to. It's all about being long-term, value focused, doing the right deals at the right time. Also not being stagnant and constantly looking at opportunities and screening things. So that's how we kind of look at it, of growing through that lens.
Well, that's a pretty good summary, a little bit about you and family and IPC and the opportunities going forward. Maybe one question, what worries you? What keeps you up at night?
Yeah, it's a good one. And two things that this industry faces that's going to be challenged is obviously the whole decarbonization movement and access to capital, I think, is something that is going to be continuing to be challenging within this industry. So it's super important to get in front of that and be able to secure good financing options, maybe even, you know, at a time when you don't need it. And that's exactly what IPC has done by accessing the Nordic bond market and securing $450 million USD in bonds that mature in Q1 of 2027, and arguably not in a position where we really need that, but we feel that having it as an insurance policy and as well as the optionality and flexibility it provides to us is a really good thing to have. And further to that, we also have a RCF in Canada of 180 million CAD that's undrawn. So access to funds and liquidity is very, very important. I think a second challenge that as a whole the industry faces as well is this whole stigma and negativity towards the oil and gas business and attracting young talent to come and work in this industry, I think is going to be a challenge that we're all going to face, and we're all going to have to try and do our part as an industry to raise awareness and talk about how critical this industry is ultimately to making the world go around. And those are two elements that are quite important and things that figuratively, you know, could keep me up at night a bit.
If you were to leave the audience with a message on IPC, what would you leave them with? What would you leave the investor with?
Yeah, I think differentiated value per share growth in terms of the company. If you look at us, the amount of dilution from a share outstanding standpoint from when the company is formed to where we are today, there's only been just over 10% dilution in our shares outstanding. The only dilutive transaction we did was with Black Pearl Resources. And with the strength of the company and where we are today and having that production growth coming forward and a focus on continuing to do shareholder returns in the form of buybacks at this point in time, I think if you're able to form a long-term view and see the underlying fundamentals as well as the track record in IPC, you know, it's something that is very, very compelling, and it separates us from our peer group in terms of that value per share growth that's coming.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a good covering of the waterfront. I really appreciate your time, and I know a lot of people out there will too.
Thanks very much, Trevor. It was an absolute pleasure to talk with you today.
We can end the formal conversation there.
Right on.
Hello, listeners out there. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Hopefully the episode provided some insights. If you enjoyed the show, check out trose.ca, where more episodes are yet to come. You can also subscribe to the podcast, where your token of support is much appreciated. Until next time, happy coffee drinking.